Hi, I'm Sharad Chutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations in art, culture, and ideas. I'm here at the Gerard Budaya bookstore in Petaling Jaya, and with me is Daniel Chiu, the founder of Native Discovery. It's a social enterprise that hopes to create impactful business opportunities for the Orang Asli community. Thank you, Daniel. Wonderful kind of mission statement that's on your website or your, some of the material that you sent me when I first reached out to you. And I've reached out to you partly because I think there's a growing concern, and it's linked to the planetary crisis, that we need to rethink our relationship to the natural world and also to people and communities for whom the natural world has been a partner, rather than, as many of us modern people have, a place to exploit resources for our own ends, right? So this is a really important conversation. Now, before we get into what Native Discovery does, I wish if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to becoming the founder of Native Discovery.
Sure. So, so thank you for having me. And I think if I were to go a bit into my backstory, it really starts when I was a university student. So I studied civil engineering, and halfway through, I think I realized that it really wasn't for me. I think not in the sense that I disliked the subject, but I didn't see myself going down that path. So because I was a civil engineering student, I sought out other adjacent opportunities. And one of that was volunteering to go and build housing in Orang Asli communities. So I went there with the idea of just building the house. At that point, I haven't really heard of the Orang Asli to begin with, other than obscure pages in my sejarah textbook once upon a time. And I actually had a chance to get close and personal with them. And I realized that what I've been told about them on this whole like mysticism that we tend to have about this community isn't really portrayed well. I think once they started becoming my friends, my peers, I realized that they're not too different from you and I. Of course, they have their own unique cultures and own unique context. But I also felt that they've been subject to some sort of injustice just for how they chose to live their lives.
Right. Before we get to the Orang Asli, it's still on you and the kind of worldview that you have developed or the community of like-minded people that you're with, you know, and in pushing for something, a project like this. Could you tell us a little bit? I mean, not to knock civil engineering, I know it, it's very important. It's part of the genius of the species, right? Earthworks and, you know, transporting water from great distances. I mean, this is what civil engineers work on, right? Generally, yeah. Infrastructure. So is there something of that thinking still in you? I mean, are you kind of committed to the idea that one can, they were engineer ones ourselves as a species out of the problems that we have created?
Sure. Yes, I fully subscribe to that, actually. So I think one thing that I did come to believe is that one way or the other, we are all engineers, right? If you think about what that word means to begin with, because like you mentioned, we engineer solutions to problems, or we engineer the kind of lives that we want to live. So in that sense, yes, I do think that part of my time spent has stayed with me.
Right, okay, and you speak about Orang Asli culture, but what about your culture? How would you describe your culture?
That's a really good question. So I think one thing as well that I noticed is a lot of people have this expectation of the Orang Asli that they still practice like their traditions and they still know their myths. But for example, for me, like every year for Chinese New Year, so I'm Hokkien by origin, right? And I practice all sorts of rituals with my family, and my parents make sure that I do it and I commit to it. But if you were to ask me why I do it, I think I've lost the plot. I think for me myself, if I were to describe my culture, I know that I'm broadly Malaysian. I'm Malaysian Chinese, I'm Hokkien. But a lot of the underlying intrinsic meaning, I think, has been lost to me in some way. And in many ways, then that kind of makes me like, I think the term is like third culture kid as well. Like I do think I have a lot of Western influence in me as well. So to be fair, I wouldn't really know how to describe myself fully or articulate it in a succinct way.
Yeah, I think we all expect each other or the other to be, you know, as a cultural robots. Like they somehow fulfill whatever it's written in textbooks about a particular culture, right? We often just have fragments of our own culture. And I think that's true of the Orang Asli too, at least from what I read, you know, when I studied anthropology. But I want to ask you, beyond the ethnic dimension of your culture, culturally, you're a modern person. You're deeply individualistic. you believe that the planet is there for your taking. This is a stereotype. You know,
sure.
It's a broad characterization. Yeah. Because we forget that culture is also the choices we make about how we want to live and what we think we are entitled to. And as modern human beings, we think we are entitled to take from the planet what we want. Is that something that you have to interrogate in yourself as well?
Oh, sure. I think that's something I ask myself all the time. So, for example, like capitalism, right? Like majority of the way that we operate today is based on a very capitalistic model. And I myself don't know how to feel about that because I feel quite conflicted about my position in it. Because one side of me is like, yes, I like the idea of meritocracy, being able to accumulate resources, but I don't like the process that it drives because it leads to marginalization of certain communities. But I realized rejecting that culture, so to speak, also marginalizes myself. Because if you were to sit on the fringes, you will also face particular kinds of challenges. So I think,
But the fringes are very interesting, and I think this comes back to a broad discussion of, say, Orang Asli communities in the peninsula who have recognized, as the peninsula developed agriculture, as it became modern and there were industries, that they made an active choice to remain on the fringes. People do choose actively not to engage industrial society, not to become full-time wage earners, because they see the downside of it. And they are serious downsides. We live for the machine, don't we?
Yeah.
So, in that sense, these are choices and conversations you're having with your associates. Because I know you are a founder of Native Discovery. You have some colleagues who are full-time with it. You're not yourself full-time. How does that all work in terms of keeping this little project alive?
Well, I think it's also to recognize that the work that we do at Native is quite unproven so far, right? The idea of co-creation with indigenous communities to build businesses in Malaysia, I think it's really new. I think I've tried looking up other similar organizations and I can't really find much. And there's a reason for that as well, right? There are complexities that come with this type of work. But I believe in the social enterprise world, there's this term called patient capital. And the whole idea is to be able to do something for a long period of time with the idea of reaching good outcomes through a certain process and journey. Because it takes time for these things to build, right? It takes time for a community to come together. It takes time for the market to become aware. I think for myself, I really want to be an enabler to people who do want to jump into this field, such as my team. And as for myself, I think I also have a lot of curiosities. And I also want to see what's my position helping enable things like this to exist.
Right. So did you say patient capitalism or is it patient capital?
Patient capital, yeah.
Okay. So who's the, what are you reading this? I mean, where did these ideas come from that cohered with your lived experience, your experience with Orang Asli communities?
Sure. So I think this term, I think I first heard it from an organization called Acumen. Mm-hmm. So they are the largest one of the largest social impact investment organizations where I'm also an Acumen fellow. So there is a certain worldview that I've been exposed to, right? So the idea is that capitalism is not necessarily bad. It is simply how we have come to view it. So if returns are simply what you're looking for, of course, if you enter the world of VCs, right, is I want a 10x in 2 years. But the idea
VC being venture capital.
Venture capital, yes. Okay. Yeah. But in the world of patient capital, it's that I'm still looking for a financial outcome, but I also weigh other things. So for example, social housing developments, that can also be incredibly impactful and it can also be profitable, but perhaps not to the extent of a mass condominium, mixed lot development in the way that we understand today. So I think, I think that's where I've learned the term patient capital and what I've come to believe is a more healthy way or wholesome way of looking at the model that we have today and applying it.
Right, tell us a little bit more about Acumen, because that sounds like it's trying to shape the world of activism and business and all start a new conversation in the social enterprise space.
Sure. So I think Acumen is indeed a world leader. They're a thought leader in this space. I think what Acumen is really trying to push forward is that social business is viable and using capitalism, right, per se, is not a bad thing. I think most of us in the activist field or social field has come to, when you hear capitalism, it makes you crawl on the inside. Mm. But I think Acumen is trying to show you that it doesn't need to be that way. It's where it's just a tool, and it's really about how you use it. And Acumen wants to enable the next generation of social entrepreneurs to really use that tool to do good things,
I think. Right. Okay, yeah. So in terms of sequencing, was it your sort of outreach work with Orang Asli communities and building homes, then Acumen, and then Native Discovery, or some other order?
It starts with my outreach work, like being a volunteer, building homes, and then I went on to work for that same organization. So it's called Epic. It's also one of the largest social enterprises. So I went on to work there. And that really put me face to face with the Orang Asli. And that's where I felt that my interactions with the Orang Asli and being on this journey allowed me to grow a lot personally, like by experiencing their hospitality. And they showed me a lot of wonder, right, in nature and so on. And I thought it would be nice if other people could also have that same experience. So I started hosting trips for fun. That's kind of the origin story of like Native. And it turned out to be something that was in demand to some extent. And I figured that I wanted to grow that. And through that work, then I got exposed to Acumen, which then saw what I was doing with Native and said, hey, why don't you join our fellowship program? And that's kind of like the thread of thought.
Okay, yeah. Wonderful. We're going to come back and we're going to go deeper into Native Discovery and the work that you do. We'll take a short break.
Sure.
We'll be back. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Daniel Teo, founder of Native Discovery. It's a social enterprise. As you've been explaining, the genesis of the idea and the kind of philosophical underpinnings of your involvement. I really love the idea of patient capital. Not that I agree necessarily,
sure,
that capitalism is benign, because you are and remain a cog in a larger wheel, right? And a machine of many wheels. And so the question is, you know, impact. So impact is a lovely word, but it raises the bar so high, because you could work with a community and it could be meaningful to them, mm-hmm, and for you. But when we talk about impact, are we talking about social impact? Are we talking about changing something fundamentally in society? Is it that level of impact, or is it a more personal level of impact that you strive to achieve?
Right. So I think for me, there is, of course, a long-term vision. But also on the short term, there are some practical concerns that we try to address. So I think for Native, like, it's all about, like, I think in the social sector, people always talk about what's your theory of change, right? So I think like it kind of, there is a certain thought process to the way that we construct things. So for example, the Orang Asli as a community have often been dispossessed, or they've been told that, you know, like, your model of life does not fit like mainstream society, right? Mm. I think that's a common narrative. But for me, like, my worldview was that the Orang Asli are actually sitting on a gold mine of things, right? They have so many assets, whether it be tangible or intangible. Their songs, the forest, nature, it's just that they don't have legal ownership of it per se, and hence can't make certain decisions. But for Native, our theory of change is that we work with them to turn these undervalued assets into things that they can use and benefit for themselves. And the whole idea is that then they can experience like tangible improvements, right? Or if we were to simplify it, they get paid for it. Like, they build a livelihood out of it. But it doesn't stop there. That's maybe the short-term end of it, to address the practical concern. But the long-term idea is that because they've come to see their culture as something that's not valued, but now they are seeing that people are willing to invest in my culture, to invest in my community, and maybe that means I'm worth something.
But to what extent is that sort of taking your bourgeois values and giving it to a community for whom values come from something other than the commodification of both intangible and tangible resources they have?
Sure. I think that's a good question. And I think it's definitely not applicable to every single community. And I think it's very important. That's why there's a certain due process you take, right, to see whether that community itself is aligned to this worldview. And I would say the communities that we work with, which are mostly on the fringes of Selangor, have already been touched by this worldview. And it is aligned in that sense. It's just that they haven't been able to own or capture value from what's going on. And that's where we work with them to make sure that they receive value for what they have or wish to do.
Right, okay. Yeah. So that could be a longer conversation, maybe another show. But I think it's time for you to tell us exactly what Native Discovery does.
Sure. So essentially, what Native does is we work with Orang-Asli communities to curate and co-create businesses. So mainly that involves community-based tourism, where we work with potential community members who have things that they'd like to share, whether it be skills, walks in the forest, or crafts, you name it. I think that's the dimension we work in. And we work at a community level. So we do start with individual hosts, but we try to organize the community so everyone is able to reap the benefit together. And on top of that, we also sell indigenous products. So we run Biji Bumi Durian, which is Malaysia's first indigenous durian brand, where the durians grow in the wild. Typically, people don't see them as anything special, but it's because people don't know the stories behind them and how they work. So we also work with the Orang Asli to bring that out into the world.
So you're not suggesting to them that they plant Musang King for the China market?
No.
Okay, but durians are already so expensive, and I can't imagine, because you can't scale these things up in any way that could make use of the economies of scale, that the pricing on this is going to be, for only the few, right? I mean, how does that work? The question of pricing, the question of scalability of these projects. What's your thinking around this, and what's the thinking of your partners in the Orang Asli community about this?
Sure. I think in the business world, of course, scale is what most people aim for. And it's not, and I would say, I would challenge the idea that it's not scalable. Because for example, Native, we try to take on a more platform role, and that's kind of what enables us to scale, where we replicate things in different communities. But on the Orang Asli end, the question is, do they need to scale? I think people always want to scale, but do they need to scale? Is it within what they actually want? I think that's the question we ask ourselves. Mm-hmm. Because for example, every year in a single community, they could harvest up to 100, 200, 300 tons of durians within a span of 4 to 8 weeks, which is significant, right? But
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is that a lot of this is still it's unknown, they don't have access to markets and things like that. So there is already a lot of work to do even at this level. If you look at 300 tons in the durian industry, it is a blip, it is nothing. But for a community, it is incredibly meaningful to be able to make something of it. So I think scale, it just depends on what do you mean by scale, right? At what scale?
Right. So I love the fact that you brought in the question of stories and storytelling as a way of creating value for products and or services that the Orang Asli community, your partners, can bring to the market. But is there a take-up? Is this something that you think Malaysians want or even understand? Will they pay, if there's a premium on a product because of the story, because of the difficulty of which challenges of putting it out in the market? Are Malaysians willing to do that?
Yes, I think when I first began, I think I was perhaps skeptical as well. But I think throughout even the pandemic, I've learned that Malaysians do care about this, and an increasing number of them do. Increasing number of us do. I think Malaysians are starting to value ourselves a lot more. And also there's this whole idea of cultural understanding that's trying to come up, right? I think a lot of Malaysians have become curious about things beyond their own bubble. And I think it is viable in that sense. But I think for us as well, it's not as if we've exhausted the market. So I wouldn't be able to tell you as well what's the limit of that.
Right. And so what are the challenges? You've sort of briefly run down a list of products and services, the nature walk being, a service, and the durian will be the product. What else would surprise us to know that that is produced by the Orang Asli community? What is it? You're selling, I guess the walk would also be an experience, right?
Yes.
And now experiential tourism. I mean, I think tourism has always been about experience anyway, but it's a lovely tag. It's a lovely way of reframing an old product. What do you think we'd be surprised by in terms of what is on offer on these platforms?
I think so far, at least in terms of Native, we are at that point where we're looking at experiences, we're looking at products. But I think we're also looking at a dimension of, when you think about opening new markets, right? Because that's a lot of our work. like things like Orang Asli also produce a lot of art, and some of the art is very high quality. It's just that people don't understand it that way. It's like the term, right? Art versus handicraft. When you hear the term handicraft, you're like, oh, it's something quaint, like charming, but small and not too valuable. But I think it's also to challenge that idea, because to make that one like bag or pouch, right, can take them weeks.
Okay, we want to ask you this, because you think of the, say, the Ma Mary. The Ma Mary are well known for their artistic and work, and you're right, it's art or it's handicraft or it's religion in many ways, right? So what is it that, because this has been around, the Ma Mary, you know, wooden carvings have been around for a long, long time. What is not going right there, or some, what is happening there that you are somehow building on or trying to innovate with?
Right. Well, I think like something not, I think what they're doing is amazing. And something not going right perhaps can be used, can, I think it's only fair to apply that perhaps commercially, right? Because it's not like they're selling like hotcakes or anything like that. Or they might be, I'm not too sure either. But I do think there is opportunity to look at how can this become something appealing. Because typically, like any travel, it works where people buy things because there's an emotion attached to it, right? Like you would buy that figurine if you visited the Orang Asli and hence
the cultural village, the Ma Mary.
Yeah, the cultural village. But you wouldn't seek it out ordinarily. So I guess it's how to create that connection to make people value it and desire it. And I guess, rather that is the path we want to go down.
Right, okay. And this is a question I really should ask your Orang Asli partners, but I'm going to ask you because you're sitting in front of me.
Sure.
Which is, is there intergenerational conversation within the Orang Asli community about this kind of collaboration?
Sure. I think the way it's looked at is different across generations. So for us as well, we work with people as old as like 60, 70 to younger generations.
My age.
Oh, really? Really? Oh, okay. You look... Like
don't worry, let's move on.
So I think definitely there is a conversation. And I think every individual also has a different point of view. Mm. So for me, I don't think it's fair for me to generalize, right, what they say. It's not that stereotype where the young want to do it a certain way or the old want to do it a certain way. So I would just say it's very diverse. The worldviews are very diverse.
Okay. Daniel, how would anybody interested in what Native is doing get in touch or kind of explore what is available? What is it there for our audience?
Sure. So you can check us out on Instagram, Facebook. Our handle is Discover Native, or you could visit our website, which is www.discovernative.org.
Okay, and everything is there?
Yeah, everything is there.
Thank you so much, Daniel, for this really wonderful conversation. I wish you all the best, and maybe one of these days we can bring some of your partners together in a larger conversation.
Yeah, that
about
would
the
be
work.
Wonderful. Mm. Because I realize I myself am not an Indigenous person, so it's best to ask them as well.
But you're directly the social entrepreneur. That's what I was interested in. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Daniel Teo, founder of Native Discovery, a social enterprise creating or hoping to create impactful business opportunities for the Orang, or rather with the Orang Asli community of Malaysia. That's all we have for Let's Talk today. I'm Sharad Putin, only on Astro 180.